Hello everyone, I am Vikodamananda, I am a Buddhist monk, and today I want to give a talk about death and the contemplation of death. And the reason I want to talk about this topic is because it is very fundamental to essentially all religions as well as to virtually all philosophical traditions, because it touches on two very fundamental questions, which are: what happens after the death of the body? Do we continue after death? And how to live a good life? Now, I can understand that some people might wonder. I can easily understand what the topic of death has to do with the question of an afterlife, but I cannot quite see what it has to do with the question of living a good life. So let me go into that first. So in the first instance, when we talk about meditating on death or contemplating death, we do not mean by that we should think about that maybe by the time we are 80 or 90, we will pass into some peaceful nothingness. This is not what is meant by that. Rather, we want to encourage and we want to say it is a good thing and a good idea to at least during some part of our life, or periodically even, to think about and to bring to our attention the fact that any moment we can die. Now you cross the street, you get hit by a car, you die. You fall down the staircase, you break your neck, you die. You go to your doctor and he declares to you, "I'm very sorry, but we found you have a tumor in your brain and you have only 3 more months to live." And then you die. Or an earthquake destroys your house and buries you underneath it. Or if you eat meat, you eat a piece of chicken and a bone gets stuck in your throat and you suffocate and die. Or some psychopath captures you and murders you, perhaps after some prolonged period of time of torturing you, and then you die. So virtually any moment, any time, we can die. But not only we. Everyone we know, everyone we cherish, everyone we love, equally can die anytime. You wake up in the morning and you receive a phone call, your best friend has committed suicide last night. Or your mother or father died from a heart attack. Or you have a baby and some emergency call captures your attention for 2 minutes and you turn around and your baby drowned in the pool or fell down the staircase or touched some loose cable. And this can happen to anyone you know. So equally for everyone you know, they equally can die anytime, any moment. But then some people might say, "Okay, I don't really care. My life is not all that good. So if it's finished, then it's finished. I'm free from my suffering." Which leads me to the second question, the question of an afterlife. Now, actually, in modern times, there has been done a fair amount of research on various phenomena touching on this topic. And the perhaps most famous phenomenon is the phenomenon of near-death experiences. Now, for anyone who does not know what a near-death experience is, a near-death experience is usually life-changing experience that a person has who comes very close to death, either during an accident or maybe some complications arise during an operation, all these kind of things. And interestingly enough, across cultures, across the globe, you know, whether people are religious or non-religious, people report very similar experiences. Usually they see some light, or they see themselves floating out of their body, an out-of-body experience. Sometimes people see departed relatives. Sometimes people have life revision experiences. Sometimes people are given a choice, either they can move on or they go back to their present life. So there are a limited amount of experiences that people have. People usually have variations of these few experiences. And these experiences are also by no means rare. Now, I think the official statistics is that 10 to 20% of people who have a cardiac arrest, which means they have been in a condition where their heartbeat stopped, so all their life functions cease to function, or they stop breathing, their heartbeat stopped. Now, usually this is measured in a hospital, where many of these cases were recorded. And that 10 to 20% of people who have a cardiac arrest report having a near-death experience. So, but these experiences are also by no means always merely subjective. Now, there are perhaps even many cases that have been recorded where the patient could describe the exact arrangement of an operation. Now, even they have been apparently unconscious during the whole operation, they could describe various details that they could not have perceived because their eyes were closed, and even with their eyes open, they have reported having had like an vision from above. They have seen the whole scene from above, and they could describe in detail many things that happened during an operation, for example. For example, one case, one doctor, during an operation, he put, I don't remember exactly what it was, either his mobile phone or his glasses, and he put onto a cupboard or into a cupboard during an operation. And afterwards, shortly afterwards, he was looking for them, he forgot where he put them. So, and when the patient awoke, he told the doctor, if you're still looking for your glasses, then you put them into that cupboard. So, and he could not have known this merely through sound or anything like that. He has seen that from above, according to his own reports. Another quite famous example is one of where one patient, I think he stayed for quite some time in a hospital already, and he became a little bit friendly with one of the nurses. But his main nurse one day was taking a day off, and exactly at that same day, he had some complications arising. He had to be sent to the emergency room, and he had a cardiac arrest. So he approached that, and he would later report that he saw during that time his nurse, and she told him that his time has not yet come, but that he should pass on a message to her parents, which was that she is very sorry for the red car, the red Mercedes or whatever it was, but he should come back. His time has not yet come. So, and when he awoke, he told his present nurse that he had this weird experience, that he saw his usual nurse, and she told him that his time has not yet come, but that he should pass on to her family, to her parents, that message that she is very sorry, and she's sorry for the red car. And that nurse, with tears in her eyes, stormed out of the room, and made some phone call, and it came out that this nurse has had a car accident, or she borrowed the car of her parents, which was a red car, and she died approximately the same time when he had his operation. So these experiences go beyond merely subjective experiences. And there are many such cases recorded that are taken serious by scientists and that are recorded by nurses and doctors, people who hear these stories regularly. So this perhaps can make us think that maybe after the death of the body, it's not all finished. But this is not the only case. This is not the only phenomenon. There's at least one more phenomenon that I would like to talk about, which is has been studied quite extensively by one professor, Professor Ian Stevenson, from, I forgot exactly which university, maybe University of Virginia or something like that. One American university, and he made extensive research and wrote, I think, a number of books wherein he recorded cases of children who remember their past lives. When the children report having been somebody else in their previous life. It happens usually with children between the age of 2 to 6, that they report or begin to talk about that they remember they have been somebody else in their previous lives. So, and in modern times, this can be researched much easier than it used to be. So many of these children, they report details about a town in a province or a different country that they have never been. And they can describe exact details of how they lived. They can tell their name. They know the name of their husband or wife, their children, their dog. They can describe exact details about the life of a person who died before they have been born. So, and many times these children, when they died in their previous life from an unnatural death, like they have been stabbed or something like that, very often the children have a birthmark that corresponds exactly to a stabbing wound, for example, of the previous person. So this has been when there have been like newspaper reports or autopsies, etc. So this is something that is also quite well researched. Now, I think that professor died already, but I think his successor keeps going this project. So now these are phenomena which should make us think. Now, if we think that life ends with this body, then there is a fair amount of evidence for that that might not be the case. So, but this was mainly just some food for thought. But then how to meditate on death? How to gain a direct experience of death without having to die? And for that, we start, as with any other meditation, we try to find a secure place, a place that we feel secure and that we feel we won't get disturbed. And we sit down comfortably, and then we use something to nudge our mind into the direction of our meditation subject. And one way of doing that for the contemplation of death is using an anchoring phrase. As, for instance, I will die, that's for sure. So the benefit of having such anchoring phrase is that you can also use it outside of, you know, your meditation sitting. Then usually meditating on a samatha object requires a fair amount of dedication, and so you're not likely to gain a big success, you know, just when meditating once on the subject. So what you want is to find a way to continuously come back to your meditation subject. And if you have a phrase like, I will die, that's for sure, you can use that, you know, during your daily activities whenever your mind gets distracted, or you know, you get angry, or you get confused or have doubts. Then you can try to remember, you know, your meditation subject and, you know, the fact that you're gonna die at some point. And then usually it's much easier to make the right decisions. So, but then when you're sitting down and, you know, you decide you want to meditate on the subject of death, you know, you need to find a way of, you know, repeating this phrase to you in a manner that does not agitate you, and in a manner that, you know, it calms you and that just nudges your mind into that direction. And, you know, for anyone who already has a habit of meditating on their breathing or of scanning the body, then you 100% can combine these subjects. For instance, you breathe in deeply, stop for a moment, and then slowly, I will die, that's for sure. You breathe out, and you take another deep in-breath, hold for a moment, and then, I will die, that's for sure. Another in-breath, I will die, that's for sure. And then you breathe out. And you know, you do that for a number of times. And when your mind gets bored with just repeating the same phrase over and over, you start adding people. So you start to not just repeat to yourself that I will die, that's for sure, but you also try to remember other people that you love and that you, you know, would feel not very happy about if they would die. So you think about, no, my best friend will die, that's for sure. My mother, my father will die, that's for sure. My boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife will die, that's for sure. And you do that until with a certain person you feel something more strongly. So, and with that, when you begin to feel something, you will enter the second phase of the meditation, or the second stage of meditation. So for clarification, basically any meditation subject can be said to have three stages. Now, the first stage is you have an impersonal relation with the meditation subject. So, for instance, if you are practicing breath meditation, then in the beginning, you don't really care about whether your breath is going in or out or is long or short. You just think, no, hopefully I get something out of this meditation, and then a breath comes and then you maybe forget again, and then you think about, no, maybe this is not for me, maybe I should do something else, and then maybe another breath comes in, and so on. So now this is an impersonal relation to a meditation subject. And then the second stage of meditation is you develop a personal relation with your meditation subject, which in the case of death will mean that you begin to feel something. You begin to feel that if death comes into my life, either in my own life or that somebody close to me will die, that I will care, I will feel something. And if you enter this stage, your whole goal or your whole work will be around making that feeling grow. So now this has to be clearly understood, that now this meditation, at least at this stage, is not about, you know, feeling happy. That is about developing maturity and wisdom. So, but if you begin to feel something, you have to add something to your meditation, and that is your faculty of imagination. Now, I know almost everyone thinks that he's not very creative. Most of us feel we don't have much imagination. So it is difficult. But this is what you train in meditation, to learn to use your faculties. So if you become convinced that it is helpful and important to meditate on the subject of death, then slowly your faculties will grow. And what you want to do is you imagine scenarios where the person that you choose will die, and you imagine kind of the worst possible scenarios, so that you get more and more intense feelings related to the subject. Now, this will be the task in this stage, that you use your imagination to create something in your mind that makes you feel a strong, deep feeling in relation to the subject of death. And principally, you can allow your mind to run wild as long you are not just playing games in your head, and as long you feel something. So if you feel that, well, there's nobody I'm very close with, and my own life is also not all that great, so I don't feel very strong feelings related to the topic of death, then make something up that is believable to you. Now think about maybe next week or in 2 weeks, now you meet the girl or boy of your dreams, and you fall in love and you get married, and after 1 year you have a baby, and things going great for you, and because you are so happy, you become confident, and you quit your old job, you start your dream job, and things work out, and suddenly your life has become incredible. And then maybe you want to show your child the ocean. You want to go on a holiday. You want to show your child the ocean or the mountains. And so you go on a holiday and you drive. And for a few moments, you're a little bit unattentive. And then a truck hits your car, for example. And your wife and your child, or your husband and your child, die. How would you feel? Is this really the same task that basically a movie producer will face? If you want to create a good movie, you have to see to it that people get involved, that people feel something, and that people remember afterwards what they have seen, and that they talk about afterwards what they have seen, and ideally that they remember even after a few years your movie. So now this is the task of a producer, and this is the same task that you have in your meditation in this stage, that you create images in your mind, scenarios in your mind that make you feel something in relation to that. And if you can actually do that, it's very important that you don't rush over this, that you really try to feel intense feelings of sadness, intense feelings of you would really lose your mind, that you would really be deeply affected by that situation. If you can do that, then you kind of accomplished the second stage of meditation, and then you can move on to the third stage of meditation, which is developing a transpersonal relation with the meditation subject. And there again, this is not going easier. You have to again use your faculty of imagination to develop not distance to the topic of death, but a transpersonal relation to death. And the way of doing that is that you work on the same images, the same story, the same thing that you made up in your mind in the previous stage. And you try to develop something like a bird's eye perspective. And you can do that by kind of zooming out and fast forwarding a little bit, depending on your story and depending on what kind of scene touched you. On that will depend on what you have to do. But for instance, if you take the scenario of you have lost your wife or husband and your child, fast forward a little bit and see how you're continuously depressed and you start drinking and maybe you begin to use some drugs. Maybe it's easy for you to get some drugs, so you try some drugs and you try to imagine how your life goes down and down, further down the drain. And you lose your job because you are drinking all the time. And in the beginning, maybe your friends were trying to help you and give you emotional support. But maybe after some time, most of your friends and the people that were close to you feel that they don't have the energy anymore to support you. So people turn away from you. Now really try to imagine your life really going down the hill because of this traumatic experience. Until you feel that this response to that experience is not the best idea. And of course, something in you will tell you that, well, the opposite direction would not be very great either. If you would just forget about everything and you just would go on with your life as if nothing had happened, that doesn't seem very humane. And this is precisely the crux of this stage of the meditation. That you find the right way, the right balance of neither falling into one extreme nor the other extreme. That's about finding the middle way. Now, what would you have to do? How can you respond to a traumatic experience? How can you respond to the death of a loved one? In a manner that you don't just forget about it, but neither you just, go down the hill or go down the drain. And this will be really the task of finding out for yourself. And maybe for those whose circumstance or story requires something else, they can't get much out of fasting forward or zooming out of the situation, you can try something else. If you are convinced that after death life continues, then try to imagine that person who has departed looking onto you. If that person still continues, how would you have to act so that that person feels at peace with you, so that that person feels at peace with what happened, and you know, that that person perhaps can move on. Now, how would you have to act if you really love that person and you feel that there's no way that you can go back to what you had? What you would have to do that that person is in peace with you and that that person lets you go and is happy if you move on in your life. And you know, of course, I cannot give you just the answer. You know, that is the task of this meditation. But you know, because I know that you know, some people might get that far in the meditation and then they don't know how to proceed. Just a hint is that you know, most people find the solution in a spiritual life, you know, either in a religious life or in a spiritual life. A person who is more outwardly oriented might feel more interested in a religious life with religious rituals and so on, while a person who is more like introverted and creative might be more interested or inclined towards a spiritual life. And of course, these two are not necessarily two separate things. But now this is kind of the culmination of this meditation, that you find the proper way of living a spiritual life in a manner that, you know, honors life, in a manner that honors the past and as well as honors the future. And now what you have to do in order to get there is for you to find out. Now, I'm just here to give some vague guidelines and to nudge people in the direction of the spiritual path. But you know, people will have to find out for themselves you know, what they have to do in order to move forward on a spiritual path. And of course, this requires exactly the same faculties that you had to cultivate in order to succeed with this meditation. You require a lot of capacity for imagination and creative thinking in order to move forward on a spiritual path. And in order to respond to the tragedies of life. So, now for this meditation, I hope that eventually you come up with a story in your mind. You come up with perceptions in your mind where the people that you left behind will begin to smile, and the people that surround you begin to smile and perhaps even begin to marvel at how you take this topic of death. And how you don't just forget the past, but grow towards a better future, towards a more mature future, a better version of yourself, a more mature version of yourself, a more dignified version of yourself. That just through being honors life and honors those around you. And maybe this is a good way to close this. So I hope that some people who listen to this talk try the meditation on death and take in some of the things that I've said today and find their own way of living a more spiritual life.